You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
To wrap up the month of October, the International Trade and Administration Commission gazetted the amended export control guidelines for the exportation of ferrous and non-ferrous waste and scrap. We're going to unpack this with the Chief Commissioner at ITAC. Of course, we're going to try and get a better sense of what that means in simple English. I'm joined on the line by the Chief Commissioner, Ayabonga Tawe, to take a look at the latest gazette and what it means for the scrap metal space. Commissioner, always lovely having you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time. Let's start with a bit of context around what happened that led to the guidelines being reviewed and subsequently how we got to this point.
Thank you very much, Jimmy, as always, for the opportunity to speak to you and to your listeners. And thank you so much for giving us the chance to come and talk to our people about some of the changes that we've had here at the Commission. Well, Jimmy, I think maybe some context would be helpful. Many members of the public would be aware that since 2013, over the last 12 years or so, the export of ferrous and non-ferrous scrap wastes and other materials of a metal sort have been subject to export control, which means prior to their export, one would be obliged to go and get a permit, which would then authorize that party to export the said materials. And these would be exported to mills across the world who would use the scrap as input material. And certainly from 2013, there would have been in policy terms an obligation on some of these exporters to first offer this scrap at a discount to the prevailing world market price to domestic fabricators of scrap. So these would be people in South Africa who make all manner of steel, copper, aluminium, embedded type products where scrap is input material. And so what has happened in this instance is on the back of us administering this for over a decade, in the course of doing so, we would have encountered all manner of problems and challenges and even, I guess, opportunities to recalibrate and to reassess some of the assumptions that have informed how it is that we administer this. So this is really a review on a few fronts that is informed by the obligation we have to periodically review the price preference point system. But also, I think many of your listeners would be aware that we had published on the 8th of May this year a directive we had received from the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition to consider one element as well of the guidelines, which relates to this discount to the world market price or the prevailing world market price of scrap. And in this instance, we've done so. And so happy really to discuss tonight some of the key areas where we've made amendments to that export control framework for the benefit of some of your listeners.
Commissioner, let's get into that. Let's get into the changes specifically that have been made. And then after the changes, we could potentially get into sure. the impact that might have on local providers as well as what goes out into the export market. Let's start with the changes.
Sure, sure. Well, three areas, Jimmy. And I've indicated we've been doing this since about 2013. And the discount is one area that has changed. The discount initially began at around 20% in 2013. It was amended in 2015. To 30% because the burden of the logistics and transportation costs at that point rested on the buyers. And so in a sense, a 20% discount, if you add onto that the cost of dispatching some of the scrap, effectively eroded the depth of that discount. And so the policymakers then and my predecessor would have been part of a process to amend that in January 2015. Subsequent to that, in 2021, there was an amendment that then shifted the locus of the transport cost away from the buyer to the seller of the scrap. And that happened in 2021. And I think arising from that and also our own reading of the demand conditions in the global market for scrap, we've subsequently taken a decision here to amend it from 30% to 25%. We've also, second to that, moved to shift all of these transactions that unfold under the PPS away from cash transactions. It is our considered view that all of those transactions should be happening electronically and on the national payment system. And I think you'd be aware as to why we would do that in the context, of course, of all the discussions we're having, whether those are around the FATF and the grey list, which we've just come out of, But also in 2022, during the ban we had, there was a move to also indicate that at some point, the sector would be expected to make all of its transactions on electronic platforms. And that's still something that is being worked towards. So that's the first change, that the discount is moving from 30% to 25%. The second one is that we're shifting all the transactions away from cash towards transactions that can be done on the national payment system. The third change is an institutional change, Jimmy. We're introducing a technical working group. And in the Gazette we issued on Friday, one would have seen the terms of reference for this technical working group, which would be appointed by the Chief Commissioner in line with Section 23 of the International Trade Administration Act. And this would be composed of members of the Commission, representatives of the Receiver of Revenue, SARS, and also industry actors and players across different segments of the buyer and even scrap merchant community. Such that we're able at least to have the wealth of knowledge of some of these industry actors as we make sense of global conditions. And you would know, I mean, some of these conditions are shifting rapidly. Take a look, for instance, at some of the outlook we're hearing from the mines about copper production, increasing use of copper in wind turbines, electric vehicles, data centers, and so on. And, of course, the surge we've seen in the price of copper clearing the $11,000 per ton mark, all of which is indicating that there will probably be increasing reliance on scraps, waste, and other secondary material or recycled material for copper as some of the mines battle to kind of pump out a lot more of the stuff, which, of course, will bring into sharp focus the PPS and, of course, its regulation of the export of copper and many of the other secondary and tertiary challenges associated with that. So we think we would benefit in line with the export control regulations with having a technical working group from which we can then be able to draw insight, engage, and also be able to kind of manage some of the complications associated with administering a program of this kind. So those are the three changes, Jimmy, really, on the discount, the cash payment challenge, and then, of course, the institutional shift towards a TWG.
Nobody said modernizing systems was going to be an easy task, but the team at ITAC continues to do that. Commissioner, I want to take a look at what this potentially means for local operators, international operators, especially in the context of conversations you and I have previously had around striking that balance between protecting the market, but with also not endangering and restricting trade.
Well, indeed. I mean, I think we certainly have always said to you, Jimmy, that we're not interested in autarky here. We're not interested in kind of a blanket ban at this stage on the export of ferrous or non-ferrous scrap. Not at all. But we are reading some of the signals globally. One of those signals, for instance, was the budget speech of the Indian finance minister, Nirmala Sitharaman, earlier on this year, where they indicated the Calcutta government that they would be reducing the prohibitions on the importation of scrap into their country, that make it easier for many merchants to import scrap because they need more scrap than they are able to generate as a country. Similarly, we've also heard from the Eurozone increasing restrictions on the exportation of scrap, and there's a big lobby there to ban the export of scrap. And so everybody, as the steel and other forms of downstream fabrication are trying to green their operations, scrap becomes a critical and a strategic material. And so in our sense, really this move is to recalibrate things. There were certain assumptions that were made in 2015. Those assumptions, as I've indicated, no longer hold. It's to recalibrate that while still retaining the disincentive, even when price conditions are favorable in the global market, for there to be this kind of wanton export of scrap. We do want people, yes, there are many people who have business models that are in exporting scrap, but the principle is that that scrap ought to be made available to the domestic fabricators, especially if you take, for instance, stainless steel. We have a firm in South Africa that fabricates stainless steel. The nature and the quality of scrap they require is often heavy sections coming through from the rail operator, automotive grades of scrap, all of the same scrap you would imagine that many fabricators in places like Turkey and India as the main importers are looking for the same scrap. And so in a sense, the policy signal is on two fronts. One, that we've kind of read the mood, reading the sense of what the data is telling us, and moved in this direction, but also reinforcing right up until the PPS, of course, which is intended to end around 31 July 2027. We don't know if it will be extended, and I think the minister will probably give guidance on that. But it's really to say that as a country, we continue to deem scrap as a strategic material, crucial to also the greening of our own steel sector. But really, this is to just recalibrate the calculus of where the discount would rest, and of course, in relation to where the logistics costs in line with the regulations currently rest.
I suppose, Commissioner, it's always nice that this recalibration also lines up ever so conveniently with our conversation around beneficiation, a conversation you and I have had quite at length, to say that there is opportunity for beneficiation and these sorts of strategic changes continue to open that up.
Well, indeed. I mean, you would know, Jimmy, that we, following a decision by Cabinet in June to place chrome under export control, have alongside the department published the Gazette soliciting comment. And I know the comments for that closed on Friday. And that, if you take the stainless steel value chain, where chrome and ferrochrome is a critical input alongside scrap in the fabrication of stainless steel, is very much a beneficiation play. And I think we do need to ensure that all of these instruments operate in concert. You know, it's like an orchestra. You do need all of the different instruments to come together in synchronous fashion to make for a very nice symphony. It's not always going to be easy. We're not always going to get it right, nor will it always be a costless exercise for all. But really, I think our task is to make sure that these decisions are made on the balance of evidence in line with our policy framework as we understand it, and always give an opportunity, as we did in September 2024 and in May. It took us 13 months to make this decision, arising primarily from the obligation for us to consult. And I think we've tried to do that in this instance. But we also recognize that as these guidelines came into effect on Friday, on the 31st of October, that it's a moving picture. And we really welcome the institutional change now that will allow us to have this dialogue as the administrators of the PPS with the industry in the form of the technical working group, because I think that's also an important part of democratic policy making. And we look forward in the coming weeks to send some letters to the industry bodies to say, send us your representatives to form part of the technical working group. And maybe at some point we'll come back and tell you how that's working.
And we will hold you to that, Commissioner. We will wait on that. For those that are wanting to contribute towards that technical working group, you have a 2-week window of submission to submit your recommendations and your thoughts around these developments. For now, we're going to have to leave this conversation on that note. Thank you ever so much to the Chief Commissioner of the International Trade and Administration Commission, Chief Commissioner Ayabonga Tsawe, for taking us through some of the amended export control guidelines and what this means for the scrap metals sector.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.